Today is January 8th, and we are here at United Orthodox Synagogues in Houston, Texas, continuing our discussions of life, episodes in the life of Eliyahu HaNavi, and we actually find ourselves now moving into Melachim Bet, the second Melachim. So we find ourselves actually now beginning the second Kings, Melachim Bet, which is on page 775 in the in your Tanakhs. And we actually come to a point that Achav has died. The previous chapter talks about Achav's death. And his death is actually prophesied. He enters into a battle, and he's told he's going to die in the battle. And in fact, he does die in the battle. And now Achav is dead, and his son takes his place. And his son's name is Ahaziah. Okay? Ahaziah. And so the next time we meet up with Eliyahu is he's continuing his career, but no longer being the nemesis, if you will, of Achav. He now is taking on a new task, and that is Ahaziah. Now, just to give you a sense of Ahaziah, if you look on page 774, starting in verse 52, we get a sense of who he is. Ahaziahu ben Achav malach al Yisrael b'shomron b'shnat shiva esrei liyoshafat melech Yehuda v'yimloch al Yisrael shenatayim. So we're told that Ahaziah, who's the son of Achav, becomes king of Israel in the 17th year of the king Yehoshaphat's rule in Judah. And he reigned for 2 years. What kind of guy was he? Vayas hara b'nei Hashem, vayelech b'derech aviv, u'derech imo. He did what was displeasing to the Lord, following in the footsteps of his father and his mother, u'v'derech Yeravam ben Nevat, and in the footsteps of Yeravam ben Nevat, asher hechti et Yisrael, who had caused Israel to sin. Vayavod et habal, he worshipped Baal, vayishtacha velo, and bowed to him, Vayach'es et Hashem, he vexed the Lord, he angered God, Elokei Yisrael, the God of Israel, kichol asher asa aviv, just as his father did. So, now, this is important to know who we're dealing with when we're going to see how Eliyahu contends with this man. Okay, so, what happens soon, within 2 years into his reign, verse 2, Vayipol Achaziah ba'ad Shivacha ba'aliyato asher b'shamron v'yachav v'yishach malachim v'yomer aleim l'chud yeshu b'val zavuv elohei ekron im echye mechalize. So Ahaziah falls out of a window or falls through something and he's seriously injured and he doesn't know how if he's going to get cured. So he goes to the modern day MRI and he asks, he wants to find out from some prophets whether he is going to survive or not. And this is when Eliyahu comes into the picture. Just at that time, Umalach Hashem diber el Eliyahu hatishbi kum alei lekrat malachei melech shomron v'daber alehem hamibli ein Elohim b'Yisrael atem hochim ledrosh bival zevuv Elohei Ekron. Go intercept these messengers that Achaz is sending to find out if he's going to live or not, and say to them, prophets? Here it's translated, is there no God in Israel? But the classical commentaries say Elohim is often, they point out that the word Elohim, which is the word used in Hebrew, is often used to connote a prophecy. So let's just look at one example of that, because it makes more sense this way, to say, are there no prophets in Israel that you go inquire of Baal Zavuv, the god of Ekron? There was no way for people to directly ask God a question at this point. So the way they did it was through a prophet. So if we just look quickly, for example, in the book of Exodus, chapter 4, we could see an example of this. you could find the citation, chapter 4. Page 119. God is talking to Moshe. I'll just start a couple of psukim earlier. In 14, the Lord became angry with Moses. He said, "There is your brother Aaron, the Levite. He, I know, speaks readily. Even now he is setting out to meet you, and he'll be happy to see you. You shall speak to him and put the words in his mouth, and I will be with you and with him as you speak and tell both of you what to do. And he shall speak for you to the people. Thus he shall serve as your spokesman, with you playing the role of," again, here it's translating as God, but there clearly it's not God, playing the role as prophet, Elohim. So we see that often, here's one example, that there are other examples as well, that the word Elohim means, in this case, means prophet. So back to page 775, Eliyahu is told to say, "Are there no prophets in Israel? You have to go ask this false god." V'lachein ko amar Hashem, hamita asher alita sham lo tireh mimena, ki mot tamut vayelech Eliyah. So, and you should also tell them, by the way, but after you tell them that they're wrong for going to seek out false gods, you should also say, by the way, your boss is going to die. Okay, he is not going to live. He's not going to get out of this bed. And so and that is in fact, we don't have the account of this, but apparently that's what happened. Right? We don't have the account. Well, what we have is the malach, the angel, telling Eliyahu what to say to Ahaziah's messengers. We don't have any record of Eliyahu actually telling them that. We discussed this a few weeks ago, that sometimes when a prophet is told to say something, sometimes the Torah will record that the prophet actually did it, and sometimes the Torah will not record that the prophet did it, but the assumption is that he did. Sometimes we have a prophet saying something, and the assumption is that God told them to do it, but the instructions are not given. So we have various methods, literary methods, that are used. In this case, there's no record that Eliyahu does this, but you can see from the next pasuk he must have, because it says, "Vayashuvu hamilachim elav vayomer alehem mazeh shavtem." So the messengers return back, and he says, "Why are you back?" Which that really means, "Why are you back so quickly?" He assumed it would take them longer to get to where they had to go, but Eliyahu cut them off at the pass. So he says, "Why are you back so quickly?" Now this is very interesting, because what we see here is that what are these messengers had a choice, right? These messengers had a choice to listen to what Eliyahu said and then what?
Keep going.
But they don't keep going. So obviously Eliyahu impresses them a great deal, so much so that they feel that they got their answer they need. They don't have to. They don't have to go.
They said a man. They didn't say like a prophet.
Right, but that's interesting. They don't know he's a prophet, yeah. And his personality is still so powerful that he convinces them to turn around, or for whatever reason they turn around and go. Now there could be another explanation as to why they turn around and go. That is, they don't really care where they get the answer from. Right, those gods are fake. They're going to ask. And they found another guy. What's the difference? Did they go to this guy or that guy? Someone told them and they're going to go back. But in any, it seems more likely, based on what we're going to read further on, that Eliyahu really impressed them. And so now, but it's not only that they turn around and don't continue the king's mission. What do they become, in a sense, by going back? Let's read what happens. Vayashuvu amalachim elav, vayomer aleihem, Mazeh Shavtem, why are you back? Meaning, why are you back so soon? Vayomer Elav Ish Allah Likratenu. Vayomer Elenu Lichu Shuvu El Hamelech Asher Shalach Etchem V'dibartem Elav. He said to us, "Go back to the king who sent you and tell him, Ko Amar Hashem Hamibli Ein Elohim B'Yisrael Ata Shalech Lidrosh B'Val Zavuv Elohei Akron Lachen Amita Asher Alita Sham Lo Tirei Mimena Ki Mot Tamut." They tell the king exactly what Eliyahu had told them. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. How do you think the conversation went? These guys are walking along, and they're heading to this false god. And all of a sudden, Eliyahu stops them. So there are two ways the conversation could have gone. One way is, he could have said, "Hey, where are you going?" And they said, "Well, we're going to find out from this god whether the king is going to live or not." But it also could have happened that he simply said to them before they said anything, go back and tell the king he's going to die. Now, if that's what he said, we could understand why they turned around. Because then now they're sort of freaking out. How did this guy even know that we're heading on this mission to begin with? And that's what the psukim seem to say. Because it says, Vayomrei lav ish ala lekratenu. This man came toward us. Right? It sounds like he was planning on coming to us. It doesn't sound, because the Torah often says they met on the way, incidentally. It doesn't say they met incidentally here. It says he's coming to meet us. And then he said, the text here does not say that he asked them where they're going. He simply proactively said to them, go back and tell the king he's going to die. So if that's the case, we could certainly understand why he was so convincing, because he had all this information that presumably they were the only ones who had. So not only does his personality convince them to turn around, what do they become in a sense?
His messenger.
Right. They start out working for
the king,
and in one verse, right, they are turned around, and now they're working for Eliyahu.
Okay.
Which is a very neat, quick change. Which again could speak to the battle. We know that Eliyahu was in a constant battle with Ahav, and now we see the battle has begun again. And now the battleground is who do these messengers work for? And we see that Eliyahu is getting the upper hand. At first they start off working for the king, but Eliyahu, because of what he knew and the power of his personality, manages to turn that around, and now he has the upper hand again. Vayedaber aleihem Ma mishpataish. So now Achaz is now a little suspicious. Well, who is this guy? Why would you believe this guy? Who was this person? Tell me a little bit about him. What sort of man was he? And now here comes the punchline. They say, "Vayedaber aleichem etir meila." Vayomru elav ish bal sear veezor or azor matnav. He was a hairy man with a leather belt tied around his waist. Vayomer Eliyah hatishpihu. It's like, you can imagine how he felt. Oh no, he's back, right? Wherever he's been, he's
like
been. And now he's back. I know this is him. How does he know it's him just from this brief explanation? Because the commentaries point out that this is the way Nevi'im used to dress. It doesn't necessarily mean hairy. It means he could have been wearing, we already saw this, he could have been wearing some sort of, fur coat type of skin and a belt. And it also could, by the way, it could also mean hairy, which means he was a Nazir, which he was, and many prophets presumably were Nazirites back then. But anyway you slice it, Ahaziah knows that Eliyahu is back in the picture. At this time, he probably knows, it's like, darn you, Eliyahu, right? He's back, right? That's Eliyah, the Tishbit, he says. Okay, so now the question is, if you're Ahaz, now this is a very important question, because the next episode is really weird, okay? If you're Ahaz, if you're Ahaziah, what do you do now?
I haven't killed.
So you want to send people to get rid of.
Finally.
Now, that's true, although why would you not want to do that?
It's most probably he's got a bunch of people following him too.
Well, he was alone with these men, so presumably he does not have a posse.
No.
But why would you? So that's right. That's certainly a good answer, but there's reason to believe.
He changed his mind about his prophecy because he's saying you're going to die.
Right.
So don't you want to hear from get him and influence him to perhaps change?
Well, the only way to do that is for him to do tshuva. Right, Eliyahu's not making it up. It's not Eliyahu's decision that he's going to die. It's God's decision he's going to die. But based on the history, why would Ahaziah not want to send people to kill Eliyahu? What has happened before when anyone tried that? He killed 450, was it, right? 450 plus all the people who died with the fire on Har Carmel.
Right.
And it's a bad idea. Just leave him be. I'm going to die anyway. It's a bad idea. That's why what happens next is not entirely clear why it happens.
If Ahaziah believes this prophecy, why does he not believe in God rather than his God? If he thinks
It doesn't say he believes in the prophet, believes the prophecy. Okay. It doesn't say that. That's a very good question. That's why it doesn't say it. But it does say next, Vayishlach Elav Sar Chamishim V'Chamishav Vayal Elav. He sends 50, a captain of 50 men, like whoever's in charge of the group, and 50 men to go to Eliyahu. Vayal Elav. And they go up to him. Vine Yosheva Rosha Harai, the very love Ish Elohim Hamelech Diber Reda. By the order of the king, come down. They say, man of God, by order of the king, come down. Vayane Eliyahu, the very Sara Hamishim, Vim Ish Elohim Ani, Tered Eshman Hashemai, Vatochal Otcha, Viet Hamishacha, Vatered Eshman Hashemai, Vatochal Oto, and Hamishav. If I'm a man of God, then a fire is going to come down and consume you and your men, and that's what happens.
It does happen.
That's what it says.
They went down and then the fire
came down from heaven and consumed him. And it's 50 men. So it's if you want to argue that these people were sent to Eliyahu, maybe Ahaziah wanted to bring Eliyahu back to the palace to clarify the prophecy, or maybe to ask Eliyahu why am I going to die? What did I do wrong? And how can I fix it? Right? Maybe that's why Ahaziah sent the 50 men. That's certainly not what Eliyahu felt. Eliyahu certainly, it seems like he felt threatened because he kills them in a similar way to the way he killed people and to the way the miracle was brought on Har Carmel. He certainly does not feel that this is a clarification request from Ahaziah. He certainly feels threatened. Furthermore, if it was a clarification request or even something to honor Eliyahu, he would have sent 2, 3, 4 men. It sounds very much like he sends a group of a platoon, if you will, of soldiers to try to kill him. So then let's see what happens.
Yeah,
Ahaziah is not giving up, no. Which makes you really think that he wants to kill him.
Why do you say to kill him? It didn't say he wanted to kill him. He just said
correct, but what is Eliyahu? That's my question. Eliyahu thinks he's... It must be that Eliyahu thinks he's trying to kill him, because why else would Eliyahu kill all the men? He's bringing 50 people. They're going to try to forcefully bring him back to the palace to put him in jail or to kill him, and he doesn't want to go. Okay, so what happens? I don't know how, if Ahaziah gets word of this, but I would imagine that eventually a certain time passes, his people don't come back. He figures they're gone, so he sends 50 more people. Now he adds it. The first one was just come down. Now it's quickly come down. And Eliyahu says, oh, really? Vayan Eliyahu v'yedaber elav im ish Elohim ani tered eish min hashamayim v'tochal otcha v'et chamishecha v'tered eish Elohim min hashamayim v'tochal oto v'et chamishav. Again, the same exact thing happens. Eliyahu must feel threatened. Vayasha v'yishlach sar chamishim shlishim v'chamishav. Again, Ahaziah sends a third group of 50 soldiers. Vayal v'yavo sar chamishim hashlishi. Now, this third one is a little smarter. Maybe he sees the burnt corpses of the 102 men lying on the side of the mountain, or maybe he realizes that Eliyahu is not to be messed with. So what does he do? First, Vayichra al Birkav. He comes crawling on his knees. Leneged Eliyahu, Vayitchanein Elav. And he supplicates him, he implores him. Vayedaber Elav, Ish Elohim, Tikar na nafshi v'nefesh avadecha. Understand me, meaning look into my soul. I'm scared out of my mind. I am not here to harm you. Eilech hamishim beinecha, and the 50 here. Hine yarda esh min hashamayim v'tochal et shnei sariyah hamishim harishonim et hamishim v'atah tikar nafshi beinecha. I know what happened, and now you should recognize who I am and how I feel. And now,
if he doesn't make the request.
He doesn't.
He begs only for his life. He doesn't make the action.
He does not make the request, and the question is, does he not want to make the request, knowing that the people who came before him met
but he figures they already
terrible
know.
End?
Elijah already knows.
But he's cut off here. Look what happens. In the middle of the conversation, what does that feel like to you?
Who's cut off?
the guy, the son.
This the conversation between Eliyahu and
God talks
and the 15 and the 50, the head of the 50 and Eliyahu is cut off.
Yeah.
And a malach, an angel, right? Similar to what happened at the beginning of the chapter, the angel tells him to go meet up with the two with the people going to ask if he was going to live or not. Maybe it's the same angel or it's a similar idea. He says to Eliyahu, "Raid oto al tiram panav. Go, don't be afraid." So, what is that to me? Well, what does that feel like to you? What's going on here? Knowing Eliyahu's career up until now,
kind of like Eliyahu jumped the gun, killing these.
Yeah,
right. And so, what's happening? Right. So Hashem is like, I got to step in here. Right. If I let Eliyahu continue to do this, all these people are going to continue to die. And so it feels like an interruption. Like before the guy has an opportunity to say, I think, which Naomi pointed out, before the guy has an opportunity to say, he could have said, look, have mercy on me. Won't you please come to the king? Or yeah. I'm just, before
him.
Right, before the guy is have a chance to say that, which means before Eliyahu has a chance to react, a malach jumps in, by the very malach Hashem el Eliyahu, reid oto al tirami panav. Go, don't be afraid, which again bolsters our position that Eliyahu in fact was afraid for his life, which is why he zapped the first two groups. Vayakam vayerid oto el hamelech. And in fact, he goes to the king. Vayedaber elav ko'amar Hashem yan asher shalachta malachim lidrosh b'val zavuv Elohei ekron hamivli en Elohim b'Yisrael lidrosh b'dvaro lachen hamita asher alita sham lo tered mimena kimo tamut. This is very interesting. The second time this happened. Why does Eliyahu say that he's going to die? Right. Not because of his injuries.
Right.
Go back to the beginning of the chapter.
He never says that. He says it's because you're asking the wrong
question. Right. Look at verse 4. Ulachain, therefore, go tell him you're going to die.
Same.
Why? Because it sounds like had Ahaziah sent messengers to ask Eliyahu if he was going to live or not, maybe he would have survived. He didn't have mortal wounds, but now this is like the last straw, God is saying. This is the last straw to you. Because you went, you're going to die. Vayamat kedivar Hashem, asher diber Eliyahu. In fact, he does die. Vayimloch Yehoram tachtav. And Yehoram takes over for him as king. Bishnat shtayim li Yehoram ben Yehoshaphat melech Yehuda. In the second year of Yehoram, the son of Yehoshaphat, he does. Now you have two kings with the same name. Interesting. Kilo hayalo ben. Vayeter divrei Achaziyahu asher asa halo hema kituvim al sefer divrei hayamim lemalachei Yisrael. The rest of Achaziah's reign and his actions are written in divrei hayamim. So here we have the battle continues, if you will, between the family of Achav and the family and Eliyahu Hanavi. I'll just point out just one interesting thing that is mentioned in some of the commentaries, which is back on the question of when these two messengers first go out to speak to the false gods and they meet Eliyahu and they come back and they say, a man told us to come back and that you're going to die. It sounds like they don't know who he is, right? Which I think that's the most straightforward way to read the psukim. However, if you... There are some commentaries say they must have known who Eliyahu was. He was a very famous figure. And the Radak says, this is surprising. How could the messengers of the king of Israel not recognize him? Did he not regularly appear before Achav and Shomron? Which is they did. So how could they not know him? So Rav Samet suggests something very interesting. He suggests that, of course, they knew who Eliyahu was, but they were too afraid to tell Ahaziah that it was Eliyahu for two reasons. One, he just may have gone off on a rage and killed them on the spot.
Right.
Two, what did they do? We pointed out already. They gave up the mission that the king had given them, turned around, and became the messengers of Eliyahu.
Right. Which is already
upset. So had the king... they told the king that, yeah, we saw Eliyahu, and he thinks you're going to die, he may have been really, really angry, knowing the history between his father and Eliyahu, that now Now Eliyahu is not only prophesying I'm going to die, now he is sort of infiltrating my sphere of influence. They were just too afraid to tell him. So they play dumb. We don't know who he is. Now, it's unclear whether that's true or not, but it's another way to look at it. And to because right away, as soon as these two people gave Ahaziah two pieces of information, he was hairy and he had a leather belt, right away they knew. That's not that much to go on. Right, so it seems that they may have known also, because he was the local prophet, and that's how local prophets dressed, and so they must have known who he was, but they were simply not willing to give up the fact that they knew who Eliyahu is. So in fact, that's the continuation, and again, Eliyahu is victorious here, because his prophecy comes true. And again, the tide now turns, and there's a new king. And we'll continue, please God, next week.